Why are police photographing our license plate?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of the Reasonable Voice and the Reasonable Voices working together on our Blog Talk Radio shows is to connect the dots between politics and finance, a need for better education, especially about our world and environment, humanity and world peace, and of course the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history and environment, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world, and embracing creativity and political unity as solutions to all our challenges. I want to welcome my guest this morning, Joel Sartore. Joel, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And thank you for inviting me along, at least via telephone, on your family vacation.
Absolutely.
I don't imagine you get too many of those. You're traveling all the time.
I do not, but I'm speaking in Charlottesville, and so we are making our way by car and stopping at a few sites along the way.
Well, now there's a great segue. Let me tell you about Joel. I know of Joel's work because I like National Geographic magazine and the specials on television, and I love great photography, and he has done all of that. But to call Joel a nature photographer would be selling him short. There's a lot more to it, and you can see his work in not only in National Geographic, but the Audubon magazine, Time, Life, Newsweek, Sports Illustrated. And while I've enjoyed his work as a spectator for some time, most recently as a news reporter, I got to report on the reason Joel is on his way to Charlottesville, Virginia. Joel has made a commitment, correct me if I'm misstating here, Joel, you've made a commitment to photograph all of the species that are in danger of extinction. Is that your mission?
I have that, plus because we stand to lose half of all species to extinction by 2100, I'm trying to photograph every species in captivity around the world before I die, basically. I've been on this for about 9 years now, and
yes,
I have coming up on 4,000 species, and we figure the world zoos, aquariums, rehabbers, breeding centers have about 10 to 12,000 species total. So I figure in another couple, 3 years, we'll be at about the halfway point.
Wow.
And all of these animals are shot on black and white backgrounds using studio lighting, so it's already the world's biggest repository of studio quality animal photography that we know of.
All right, we're going to end up talking about your destination and the treetops in Charlottesville, but let's begin with this umbrella, if I should call it that, photo arc. Very much like Noah's Ark in the 21st century. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, Noah needed two. I only need one, really, two of each versus one of each. The thing is that most of the world does not even know there is an extinction crisis going on. Most people don't know what the word biodiversity means. And the goal of the ARC is to get people to care about the species we share the planet with, to realize how important those species are to continue to dwell on the Earth, and then to get people motivated to change and perhaps save some of these species. I mean, to me, it's folly to think we can doom half of all species to extinction and not have that really hurt humanity in a serious way. I mean, we need bees to pollinate fruits and vegetables. We need flies to pollinate fruits and vegetables. We need healthy forests and oceans to regulate climate, provide us with food. And so it's pretty important that people pay attention to the extinction crisis. And the photo arc, this method of doing portraits of everything, from elephants all the way down to snails, is my way of trying to create something lasting that will go to work long after I'm gone, and just show the world what we have. The nice thing is each species can serve to bring somebody into the tent of conservation and get them to care. And each species is an opportunity to attract attention, to get people in, and to read up and learn a little bit more about what these animals need for habitat, what the threats are, and most importantly, how to save them. We link to the zoo or aquarium or rehab center, breeding center on our website, photoarc.com. We link back to the center that's saving the species so people can donate directly or try to get involved any way they can.
And I have to say, Joel, one of the saddest things I read on one of your web pages, I am not certain I remember which one now, maybe Rare, but it said some of these species are likely to go extinct without people ever knowing they existed. That is so... It just hit me. So in addition to everything else, you're trying to save these species, and we should say, yes, we're not just saying animals, because it's large and small and insects and everything of all sizes, but but you're not just trying to save them, and that in itself is a worthy lifetime cause, but you want us to become aware of them, so we want to save them.
That's right. Yes, I can't do it on my own. But we can, indeed, shine a light on some of these species that live in obscurity. They may live in the mud of a marsh, or they may be something that lives high up in a forest canopy up in a tree.
Mm.
And the world is fascinated by polar bears and pandas and tigers and elephants.
Yes, yes.
And we're fascinated by those. But in terms of some of the smaller brown birds or snakes or turtles or tortoises or frogs, we don't really pay much attention. Those are what I call the least among us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the photo arc celebrates everything. Everything is as intricate and graceful and beautiful as the next. We don't play favorites, and we are able to really showcase on an equal footing every species that you can basically see with the naked eye. We are able to showcase that because of the use of these black and white background and studio lighting. So we're really able to see things that you wouldn't normally ever be able to see. A lot of these things haven't really been photographed before. And so we're just trying to have an archive. Sure, that's the bottom line. The least we can do is have an archive of all these species that we're on the verge of causing to go extinct, plus species that are common now. At its very best, what the photo arc does is it motivates people, governments, corporations to step up their game and save things and pull them back from extinction. And we have an example of that recently in a little bitty brown bird called the Florida grasshopper sparrow, which was going to be let go to extinction in the remnant prairies, what's left of the prairies in central Florida. Fish and Wildlife Service, I think they'd written the bird off. And I went down there for the photo arc and covered it, and we did portraits of it while we still could find them. And it got on the cover of Audubon. And
wow.
That cover story in Audubon moved the federal government to allocate real funding, over $1 million, to try to save it this year.
Fantastic.
So we know that the photo arc works. I wish it worked with every species, but we know that it has the potential to work because of things like this.
You know, a little while ago you said most people don't know the definition of biodiversity. Can you define it for us?
Yeah. Well, and the reason I say that is for the first few years, I called the project the Biodiversity Project.
Mm.
Nobody could remember it. Then I saw a survey that said like 70% of the people don't know what biodiversity is. Biodiversity is just the wide range of species that we share the planet with.
Yeah.
Very diverse. Every class of animals, from invertebrates to amphibians, reptiles, mammals, birds, fish. It's all the different animals taken in total, basically. Biodiversity. The diverse array of species that are here with us now at this point in time.
And
so that's all it is. It's pretty simple. Most people do know what extinction means, but do they think about it? Do they care? I would argue they don't. The majority of people, folks like you and I certainly do, and we've studied up and we care, but the majority of people around the world, and this is a global project, the majority of people are just trying to get through their day, make sure they have enough to eat, make sure they have a safe place to sleep at night.
Yes.
So talking about species extinction and conservation, these are real luxury items for people that have wealth, people that are in countries where the standard of living is very high, like the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that concerns us all. And it's really critically important to try to think about this as a global issue. We're all tied together, all 7 to 8 billion people here coming up. And that these are things that we can turn around. People ask, well, are you hopeful? There's more people born all the time. We're probably on our way to 10 billion souls before our population quits expanding. And I say, well, yeah, I am hopeful because I've seen what can happen when people fall in love with species.
Yes.
The giant panda, for example, has been saved from extinction for now. The Chinese government figured out how to breed them well, and they can protect habitat. we have several species in our country that got down to fewer than 24 individuals each.
Wow.
Like the California condor and the black-footed ferret and the red wolf from, you know, the Carolinas.
Yes.
The coast in the south. These are species that all got down to fewer than 20, you know, 24 animals, and we've saved them in their stable. Now, are they roaming free in sufficient numbers to keep going on their own? Probably not yet. Mm-hmm. It's tough with an animal like a wolf because they're far-ranging, and we inhabit most of the landscape now.
Yes.
But it shows me that it can be done if we care. And the first step towards caring is we've got to meet these animals, and that's what the photo arc helps people do.
I wonder if, it may be an obvious question certainly to you, but I wonder if a step in getting the public to care is to make the connection between human survival to the survival of these various species. I mean, I know we've...
Yeah.
What do you think?
Good point. Sure. Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of people don't like to hear the negative. They don't want to hear about war or strife or conflict, let's say abroad or even in this country. They just don't. They've got fatigue. They don't, like, combat fatigue almost.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear any more about what's going on in the Middle East or, you know, they just tune it out. So it's important that we not overload people with messages that are really negative about extinction.
Uh-huh.
When in fact, the goal of the ARC is to prevent extinction and show that one person can totally make a difference.
Mm.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
And one person can save species. I've met several people that have saved multiple species each. And you just think, you know, this is something that can be done, but we just have to, there really needs to be kind of a sea change in how we view our relationship with nature. From this point on, we have to realize that we will really mess up the planet, and it will hurt us if we don't take steps now to, let's say, conserve bees.
Yes.
And conserve butterflies and conserve frogs. All these things are bases. They're the baseline for the food chain, a food chain we depend on. So I think that it's really important to stay positive and to focus on things we can do. And the first step is getting the public turned around on realizing that, you know, food doesn't just come from the grocery store and water doesn't just come from the tap.
Yes.
But these species, when we protect them, they actually help save ecosystems for us.
Exactly.
And when we save species, and the photo art just deals with animals, but if you talk about saving plant life, if you protect the tropical rainforest, you're protecting the lungs of the world.
Yes.
These things regulate climate and where precipitation falls and where it doesn't. And that's huge. So maybe if you save species that inhabit tropical rainforests, you save us too, or at least help to preserve our climate.
Yes. I know, you know, there have been a lot of people who said Einstein never said the famous line about the bees, but whether he said it or not, I fear there's a lot of truth in it, and fear is the wrong word. I'm with you. We should accept the fact that we're all connected. That's the thing.
Yes.
We're all connected,
yes.
And there's a balance in nature. No matter what your beliefs about climate change or God or whatever, there is a balance in nature. There's an interdependency. I mean, you have to do is watch a nature show and, you know, how animals survive and, you
right.
know, and there's a connection. And as you say, it's some of them, the connection sometimes is not just animal, but insect and plant and the rainforest. My heavens, I think we haven't even tapped into what the rainforest can do for humanity.
I agree. A lot of our pharmaceuticals come from the rainforest.
Yes. Yes. Well, this is fascinating. It is a challenge, and heaven knows if you have sort of thrown down a gauntlet, a very artistic, photographic gauntlet for us to see and to pick up and do our part. Before we break for a moment here, why don't we give a website of yours where people can go and find out more? We'll do it again at the end of the next segment, too, but how do we get involved?
Sure, it's photoarc.com. photoarc.com, A-R-K.
Okay.
That's it. They can get on there and they can look around and see if any of these species grab their attention. And if they do, hopefully there's plenty of information there for folks to look at.
Fantastic. And again, they're photographed on black or white backgrounds, so you certainly get a great look at them. I'll start our next segment with a personal story about tigers and me, but then we'll get into Charlottesville. Everyone, stay with us. My guest today is internationally renowned photographer Joel Sartore, and he's a National Geographic Fellow, and he's contributed to many print and television shows with his photo art and photo arc. We'll be right back. This is Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest, Joel Salvatore, who is capturing the images of disappearing species on the planet in an effort to get us all aware and be a part of this crusade. I want to tell a quick story. It may sound like a bit of a digression, but I tell it because it's probably the closest contact I have had with nature. And it happened in a zoo, and I've been to the safari places where the rhino got loose in the other area and where the lions got on each other and the guys. I guess I have had a lot of fun. Not like you, Joel, but I have had, now that I think about it. I've always loved animals, so I've gone to a lot of zoos, but I'm pretty certain it was the Philadelphia Zoo. It was a number of years ago, and it was after hours, and I love animals, so everything's in a cage. You know, they're sleepy. It's all right. I just open the door, and you see what's coming. The moment the door closed behind me, there was an eerie silence, and then there was this low-sounding growl. Now, I knew everything was caged, but still, it was a long hallway, no windows, painted green, and I literally walked down the hallway holding onto the wall because all of a sudden I could hear a child crying off in the distance somewhere. And every time the child cried, this roar like you'd never believe. Well, I finally got the courage up to get to the end of the hallway, peeked around the corner, and there they were. Three different Bengal tigers in a cage. They were enormous. They were magnificent. They were powerful. I wasn't going any closer to them than I absolutely had to. But the door, if I didn't mention, the door I came in had locked behind me, so I had to keep going by. But what had happened on the other side of the door I was headed to evidently was where the food comes from, and someone had a child in there. When it would cry, the tigers would respond, and I'm going, oh, God. And when they were...
Well, yeah, you know, they love crying anything young because that's easy prey, isn't it?
Yes, but the beauty of them, the power of them, and the resonating sound that they made, it was, I don't even want to say terrorizing because it was too exhilarating for that.
Right.
And when I opened the door and the person coming in with the food was surprised to see me and I explained why I was there anyway. Anyway, I wanted to share that story because it was so up close and personal, and to see this, they've earned, I guess I'm trying to say, a right to share this planet with us, and they're so magnificent. Okay.
Well, I agree, and I think that beyond the megafauna, which is what impresses us the most because it's bigger than us and it's dangerous,
yes,
and beautiful, I think that if we stop and look at the details in marine or even freshwater fish or in rodents or in lizards,
yes,
we find the same level of detail and intricacy. You know, in insects, for example, insects look like they're alien beings from another planet.
Yes.
They're fantastic.
Yes.
But you have to get close. You have to really pay attention. Hopefully that's what these photo art portraits allow us to do, is to really get down on their level and really look them in the eye and care.
And, yeah, and that they have a world, and if we allow it, they know what they're doing, and they are surviving as we are.
Right, that's right. They're just trying to get by.
Get through the day. That's right.
That's right.
And for them...
That's our goal, is to help them out.
Exactly. And for them, it's a lot more challenging, the smaller they are, of course, but all you have to do is watch a bird at my bird feeders and realize, my God, every moment that they want to eat or take a drink, they have to look over their shoulder to make certain someone doesn't want to eat it, you know?
That's totally right. If you look at how a rabbit acts when you're young,
yes,
it's a rabbit.
Yes.
It's nonstop trying to eat, trying to survive, looking out for other rabbits, and looking out for the neighborhood cat.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Oh, what a life. Anyway, let's get to why you're coming to Charlottesville, Virginia. I know you're going to speak at the Paramount on the Downtown Mall, but also already your presence is felt on the Downtown Mall. For those who don't know, the Downtown Mall in Charlottesville, Virginia is a walking mall of many wonderful things and places to eat and restaurants and hotel on one end and movie theater and beautiful sights to see and outdoor dining and all of that. But it also, right at the center of it, is the Paramount Theater. That is sort of the crowning glory there, and certainly the big house of the city. And Joel is coming to talk, to speak there about his work and about his cause. But before we go inside of the Paramount, I would like you to share where your photographs are hung on the downtown mall, because I've been there.
Sure. You bet. Well, they're up in the trees, actually.
Yes.
The outdoor prints that are hanging from the trees up and down the mall. Kathy Moran, my longtime editor, the senior natural history editor at National Geographic Magazine, curated the show. Then the exhibit got hung up a couple of weeks ago, and the pictures they've sent me look... it looks like it's a lot of fun and pretty interesting. And what I love about it is there's a good mix between big charismatic animals like African painted dogs all the way down to some of the smaller stuff.
Yes.
And so hopefully people will get an idea what the Ark is all about just looking up as they walk around.
That's right. And you know, and I did the news and I told everyone, don't just look at your feet when you walk down on the downtown mall anymore, or even your plate at the restaurant. Look up.
Right.
And I've gone down there a couple of times and pointed things out to people. And the moment, Joel, you'll love this, the moment they become aware of your photographs, they leave their tables. I've seen it happen three times. And walk down the length of the mall and look up and look, because it's such a variety of art.
Wonderful. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Great. So what made the choices that you made for this exhibit?
Well, Kathy Moran, you mean in terms of which images?
Yes.
Well, Kathy Moran is a world-class editor, and she and I have been, you know, we think alike on pictures. We very seldom disagree, very seldom. She's super easy to work with, and she has been one of the biggest supporters of this photo arc and has seen virtually every shoot I've ever done. And so she knew the body of work real well. She had her favorites, and I didn't, you know what, I didn't steer it or guide it a bit. I just knew that it was going to, what she picked out was going to be just fine, and it is. It's a nice collection, a lot of good variety there.
It really is. You put your faith in the right place. It's magnificent.
Yes.
What about your new book, Let's Be Reasonable? Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, sure. That book is I've done several books. One was one called Rare, Portraits of America's Endangered Species. And that book will be available if you want to purchase it and get it signed after my talk at the theater Wednesday night.
Okay.
But Let's Be Reasonable is a more recent book. I'll have a few copies of that. That is a collection of essays from the CBS Sunday Morning Show with Charles Osgood.
Yes.
I do a couple pieces on that show a year, and that's just kind of a collection of essays all bundled into one. It's a little Nebraska-centric because that's where I live, but hopefully the lessons in it can be applied anywhere.
Excellent. So some copies of Rare will be available for your signature for those who attend.
Yes.
Tell us, it's Wednesday evening. Give us a time.
Yes, yeah, Wednesday evening. I think it starts at 7 o'clock. People should check the web to make sure. The talk is about an hour, and then there will be a book signing afterwards.
And what are you going to talk about?
Well, I'm going to show the pictures that you and I have been discussing today. We're starting to do video as well now, some of the Rare stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to show why there are really no chimps in the photo arc yet. We have a pretty funny video that documents that process. They're really hard to do. It just be more in detail of how the arc got started.
Uh-huh.
And where it is now. Another couple of years we'll be about halfway done, and then where we're headed. So it's a little bit about what it's like to be on assignment a little bit for National Geographic, and then it'll look at the Ark and some of the conservation issues that a lot of these animals face.
Now, I'm sure it wasn't lost on you, the photo Ark, Noah's Ark. I know that was intentional, but you really are, in your way, saving the species in the same way as the biblical hero. Do you get the response that I got, for instance, when I pointed out your photos going down on the downtown mall? Do you, are people, what captures them most? I imagine the beauty of the photograph itself, but then there's still more to it. There's a message, there's a goal, there's a mission to it. So it isn't...
I think the volume of the project impresses people just in the fact that we've got, you know, the vast majority of the world's crocodilians already, and we've got half the primates in captivity and more than half the turtles and tortoises in captivity. We've got a big selection, a big volume of species, and with the goal of getting pretty much everything, or at least one of everything that inhabits different ecotypes on the planet. Wow. And there are thousands of different ecotypes. So that's really to show how life evolved here and the different niches that each species fill in. Some of these specialist species are amazing, like giant anteaters or birds with crossed beaks to open certain types of seeds, and species that live in the murkiest of water or in caves that don't even have eyes anymore. They've evolved away from having eyes.
Wow.
They live in total darkness. So it's educational, but hopefully it's inspiring, especially if you see something that's anthropomorphic and looks like us a little bit with big doe eyes, and maybe we'll get people motivated by those species to get in there and care. I know that if people will fall in love with any of these species, they realize that every action that we have on the planet matters.
Yeah.
How we spend our money matters a great deal. I mean, if you're spending your money, every time you break out your purse or your wallet, you're voting.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling your retailer, I approve of what that's made of, where it was made. I want you to do it again and again and again.
Yeah.
And that's the power to change the planet. The other thing is they'll stop littering. They will they'll watch the kind of chemicals they put on their lawn. They'll quit watering their lawn because they know that the grass will green up when it rains again. And the more you water, the more you have to mow. And the more mowing means more carbon in the air. And more time loss, too. And who needs that? So I think there's lots of different environmental takeaways from a project like this that go beyond just the individual portraits.
Yeah.
Also.
I hate the silly question, what's your favorite? But, so I'm not going to ask it, but...
Well, I've got an answer for that.
Okay, what's your favorite? Go.
It's the next one. The next one.
Yes.
Absolutely. That's the next species I do. Absolutely my favorite. So I'm very excited. On this trip, for example, we're going to go to Sylvan Heights Waterfowl Park, which is in Scotland Neck, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
We're going to do that right after Charlottesville.
Uh-huh.
And photograph some of the rarest ducks and geese on Earth. These people are specialists, and they're great at what they do. So we're going to go there and spend the day there, and then we're going to go on to see a private collector, a breeder of rare pheasants. So we have several shoots. The reason we're driving out is we have several shoots to do along the way there and back, and to add to the ark. And that seems to be my kind of standard operating procedure for me anymore. I don't go anywhere unless I can shoot for the ark.
So this family vacation is is a combo of a lot of these.
Yes.
Well, but that's fun. I mean, it must be fun traveling around with you and doing this work and seeing all the different places and the species. I mean, I got to tell you, I lived in Florida for a while and going past my door. This was something from New York. I wasn't used to, but in Florida, going by my door every morning, like they were off to work or the feeding grounds or whatever. There was a rabbit that went by, a black snake that went by, and I don't know if it was a raccoon or I can't remember now, something else went by, but also the turtles would come, and because I lived right off the a man-made in a coastal kind of thing, and the turtles would come up to lay their eggs, and the birds would come to watch the eggs laid so they could steal them immediately, and I would run out and try to save the eggs, and the snapping turtle mother thought I was the threat and she'd come after me and I'm in bare feet and nature is just such a magnificent thing if we could just see it as a fellow cohabitator.
As a fellow animal here at this time on the face of the earth.
Exactly.
That's right. And it's life will go on no matter what we do to the planet to foul it up. It'll go on.
Yeah.
But it'll be very uncomfortable. We're used to a certain way of life. We're used to having plenty to eat. We like the predictable nature of how things are in terms of our standard living. And it's just very important if we want to continue that to realize that nature is not inexhaustible and that we have to do our best to protect these other species because they'll protect us.
Yes. Yes. And that's a perfect way to end our interview, Joel. It just says it all. Joel Sartore, photographer par excellence, appearing to talk to us and with us and explain to us at the Paramount Theater on the Downtown Mall in Charlottesville, Virginia, Wednesday. And you should get on the Paramount site and find out how to attend, and also visit Joel's site for the Photo Arc, ARK, and find out about his work and why he's doing it. Joel,
that's next Wednesday, June 18th.
Sorry, yes.
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, June 18th at the Paramount. Thank you so much, Joel, for being on the show, and I hope to see you next Wednesday, 18th.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Thank
My
so
pleasure.
Much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us in becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Collateral consequences. Veterans, equal pay, jobs. Believing New York Times editor Jill Abramson is the only woman cheated by the Republican vote against the Paycheck Fairness Act, or return of segregation and voting restrictions are only a Southern phenomenon, or veterans are the only American citizens being ignored to death, or families buying corporate-owned bottled water to replace their employers' coal ash deposits into their children's drinking and bathing water isn't sacrificing the health of all Americans, or having a job frees us to ignore equal economic opportunity, separate but unequal, support our troops, western droughts and eastern floods, then the program is Addington's plum. However, it wasn't the butler in the parlor with a candlestick, nor educators and first responders who failed to protect our shores from a decade of war dead and wounded, too big to fail, and the MERS virus. It was corporate lawyers, bankers, and cokeheads in secret top-floor rooms. As a veteran and human being, I'm appalled at an alleged 167 deaths of veterans because of a delay in treatment for any patient, military or civilian. But though in need of repair, it isn't the VA system that's broken. It's the systematic failure of Congress to finance human services to civilians and military alike that's aiding and abetting Wall Street to break America. Mad as hell, like Alberto Gonzalez 50 times can't recall defense, grants only temporary stay from accessory to medical negligence or a General Motors vehicular manslaughter of American drivers. So before pouring GM gloating over Chump's champagne, celebrating Chump Change $35 million value put on endangered American lives, shall we regain our moral backbone and insist Attorney General Eric Holder finally lawyer up against the program with grand jury investigations, indictments, trial by jury, and maybe some privatized prison black time for white-collar criminals. In service of the underserved 99%, the good. 1952 National Security Agency was created because of Pearl Harbor. The bad. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court was created in 1978 in a bank vault because Nixon's NSA repeatedly violated our Constitution's Fourth Amendment. FISA legally limits administrations believing, as Nixon, when the president does it, it means that it is not illegal, by requiring warrants to spy on Americans. If, like Bush-Cheney administration, you didn't go through FISA and get a warrant, you've committed a federal felony. Or, as Maureen Baginski, third highest-ranking official at NSA, put it, we've gone with another program. The Bush-Cheney-Addington administration corrupted American protective surveillance, thin thread, into the program. The ugly. Taking advantage of our nation's 9/11 grief, the Unpatriotic Patriot Act was created on October 26, 2001. And just like that, with Cheney in his ear, G.W. Bush assumed extra constitutional authority, telling NSA, I want you to develop a program. We've got the lawyers working on it, but you have my order. We're going to do this. Dick Cheney's attorney, David Addington, wrote the program. The creation of a whole new surveillance system without warrants, looking for unknown terrorists by spying on liberal, independent, libertarian, and conservative American men, women, students, teenagers of every color and religion. Ah, equality at last, for at least 99% of Americans. The program, authorized by President George W. Bush on October 4th, 2001, isn't old news, but rather why we did it, at the expense of a young voluntary military, veterans of all ages, women of every color, a middle class of every political persuasion, oh, and yes, even Republican retirees and American jobs. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.
Thank you for continuing to listen, support, and share The Reasonable Voice with your friends. We are now accepting offers for your company or organization to advertise with us, and welcome new sponsors for The Reasonable Voice. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today and every day, and recommending us to all your friends, both online and offline. And please download our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.